We now know the two-night lineups for the NBC-MSNBC Democratic candidate debates that come up in less than 2 weeks. A little bit later this hour, we'll talk about the 10 and 10 groupings of the candidates over the two nights. But I also want to let you know, Film Week comes up at 11 o'clock. Our critics will review the new Shaft, directed by Tim Story. Kenya Barris and Alex Barno are the screenwriters. Samuel L. Jackson, Jesse T. Usher, and the original Shaft, I guess you call him the OS, Richard Roundtree, also in the cast of the new Shaft. And we'll hear about the documentary Rolling Thunder Review, a Bob Dylan story by Martin Scorsese. But right now, we turn our attention to the ongoing negotiations in Sacramento over whether ride-hailing companies Uber and Lyft have a relationship with their drivers that is an employee-employer relationship and not an independent contractor relationship. As a result of the state Supreme Court's Dynamex decision, the drivers are potentially employees. The question is how the California legislature is going to ultimately determine whether they stay as independent contractors or become employees subject to all the benefits and protections that would come with that. And then the question is, are ride-hailing companies economically viable if their drivers have employee status? With a San Francisco Chronicle reporter covering the on-demand economy, Carolyn Saeed. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So where do we stand now? I know Uber and Lyft are actually teaming up on legislation that would give them a break on this. What would the bill do?
So AB 5, the bill which has already passed the Assembly and is now headed to the Senate, basically codifies and clarifies the Dynamex decision. Technically, Dynamex is the law of the land of California because it was a unanimous decision from the California Supreme Court. However, it has not yet resulted in any dramatic changes. It's just, you know, there have been some cases here and there have, that have gone through the courts and as a result of Dynamex have resulted in people being reclassified. But it hasn't made any, it didn't wave a magic wand and change everything in California overnight. AB 5 has the potential to do that by making it much more clear who Dynamex does and does not apply to. There are a lot of exemptions in AB 5, mainly for professionals who set their own rates, like doctors and dentists and architects and lawyers and even hairdressers and barbers. But the author of AB 5 is vehemently opposed to exempting Uber and Lyft drivers because they don't set their own rates and they don't have control over their working conditions, as she says. Uber and Lyft, on the other hand, are vehemently opposed to making the drivers employees, which is what they have now teamed up to campaign against.
So is anyone in the legislature sort of carrying the Uber-Lyft argument that they should be exempt? Do they have people that are backing their position, or is this a tough sell?
Well, you know, that 11 members of the Assembly voted against AB 5, and I haven't counted them up, but I believe they were all Republicans. And you know, it is the whole business community is allied with Uber and Lyft. The whole business community is against AB 5. The California Chamber of Commerce, TechNet, all the big associations that represent businesses are opposed to this. On the legislative side, it's not clear yet.
And is there any alternative bill or tweak to SB 5 that would carve out, or I should say AB 5 that would carve out ride-hailing exemptions?
There is not at this time, but that's what Uber and Lyft are campaigning to try to get. What they want, they want a bill that would exempt them from the Dynamex decision. And in exchange, they're offering what they consider significant concessions and changes for the drivers. They're offering to guarantee a base wage after expenses. They're offering to have some kind of flexible benefits pot where drivers could sort of pick a la carte, like a younger driver might not want retirement benefits but might want insurance or paid time off. And they're offering to have a driver's association that would act as sort of the voice of drivers and would handle things like administering those benefits and would handle appeals when drivers get deactivated or kicked off the platform.
Have either of the companies said what the effect would be on fares if they were required under Dynamex to treat their employees or drivers as employees if they are not exempted? Have they said how that would affect their business model?
So they have both said, basically the heads of Uber and Lyft wrote an op-ed in the Chronicle on Tuesday, and they said, quote, "It's no secret that a change to the employment classification of our drivers would also pose a risk to our businesses." They've said that in all their filings when they went public, that if their drivers were reclassified as employees, it would add significantly to their business expenses and potentially hurt their model. And it's not just expenses. It's also the flexibility of the drivers being able to log on and log off whenever they want. Uber and Lyft say, and it is true, that there is no existing model in America, really, for this, of people at McDonald's are scheduled on shifts. They might be working part-time and intermittently, but they get scheduled well in advance and told when to report for work. On the other hand, the proponents of AB 5 says just because the model doesn't exist doesn't mean that it couldn't exist, that it could potentially be possible to be an employee and be able to clock in and clock out whenever you want. But Uber and Lyft fear that wouldn't work for a variety of reasons. So, both and in terms of raising fares, they have not said specifically that they would raise fares, but it would make sense that they would have to pass along some of those additional costs to riders.
And has there been an effect on their stocks as it seems like the companies are not necessarily making headway in Sacramento?
Well, their stocks are already doing very badly. It's hard to sort of differentiate and tease out whether they're doing badly because of what's happening in Sacramento or whether they're doing badly because neither company has ever generated a penny in profit and neither has a very clear path to generate any profit in the next, 2 years. So their stocks both, quickly sank on Wall Street, but I think that there's, even larger macroeconomic forces at work there, but this certainly doesn't help it.
And no profit, even with the drivers being independent contractors.
That's
currently.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Carolyn Saeed, San Francisco Chronicle reporter. Let me bring into the conversation Stanford University economics professor Paul Oyer. He actually became an Uber driver to better understand its business model from the driver perspective. Professor, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
If Dynamex ends up applying in full to Uber and Lyft drivers that they have all the protections of employees and are not independent contractors, do you think that these companies can economically survive?
So, first of all, I think everything Caroline said was exactly spot on. And just to add a little bit to that, that reflects on your question, it's already a question of how these companies are going to survive. They don't have as she pointed out, they haven't sort of shown us a sustainable business model yet in any case. So exactly how much cost Dynamex would add or whatever sorts of benefits they're going to talk about adding, how that would reflect on their business model, it's a little hard to say because we don't even know what base business model is going to work for them in the future in any case. Whether or not they get forced into adding more benefits, what we see now for their drivers, what we see now is an ongoing negotiation, as it were, between this large group of people who drive for them and the companies at what is a reasonable rate we can pay such that the drivers will continue to be willing to do it and the business can find a sustainable business model. So adding the Dynamex decision and the types of things that the op-ed piece in the Chronicle talked about in terms of what the two ride-sharing firms might offer, adding those things certainly is going to be a challenge, an additional challenge, but they have a ways to go to figure out what is a sustainable business model in any case.
Now, there are those who think what really the long-term play here is that the ride-hailing companies are counting on having fully autonomous vehicles and not needing human drivers at all. Do you think that that's the likely strategy here? And if that is, that seems to be a risky strategy, that the economic model of that would work.
Yeah, that's a long way off, and I'm no expert in this. I don't know if long way means 5 years or 20 years, but when they are going to have drivers for a while. Yeah, I'm guessing by all indications, they're looking forward to the day where Lyft and Ubers will be provided autonomously, but they have to find something in the interim, which is both a viable business model and, works for everybody.
We're talking with Stanford University economics professor Paul Oyer. Also with us from NYU, New York University, professor of entrepreneurship and technology, Arun Sundararajan, also author of the book The Sharing Economy, which was published about 3 years ago. Professor, good to have you with us.
Great to be on, Larry.
What's your sense of the viability of these companies long term, particularly if the Dynamex decision ends up applying in full and their drivers end up classified as employees?
Well, I think both Uber and Lyft do have a viable business model in the both in the short run and the long run. I've been trying to follow their operating margins in the big cities, which is where a bulk of their business is right now. And it seems like they are investing in growth rather than taking profits, and that sort of seems like the right business strategy. But if they pulled back and said, okay, we're going to sort of get on to a path to profitability, they certainly would be able to, albeit sort of like, you know, at a smaller scale than they've promised. I think what Dynamex does is that it actually affects smaller platforms far more than it will affect Uber and Lyft. I think if you're a large enough platform, you can absorb some of the extra cost. You can spread the demand across drivers who are driving 40, 50-hour work weeks much more readily than, say, a newer platform that might be relying on part-time work. So it would have been a lot harder for these platforms to get off the ground if they had to hire drivers as full-time employers. Fares will go up probably 20-30%. But I think the big economic implication will be that, their market size goes down because the set of consumers who are willing to pay the higher fares is smaller, but also barriers to entry go up. It becomes much harder for a new platform to come along. I do agree with what Carolyn and Paul have said, and in particular about the fact that, Paul mentioned that fully autonomous vehicles are a ways off. I think 20 years is a better estimate than 5 years. You know, of course, we're going to have improvements in technology, but there's a whole bunch of social and political factors that need to align before mass market. We're letting cars without drivers pick people up. And so I wouldn't bet a business model on that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, to get a whole fleet of vehicles that are fully autonomous up and available, you're looking at a huge infrastructure and technological challenge, no question. We're talking with NYU Professor of Entrepreneurship and Technology, Arun Sundararajan. Also with us, Paul Oyer, Stanford University economist, and Carolyn Saeed, who focuses on the on-demand economy for the San Francisco Chronicle. If you have questions for our guests about the financial future of ride-hailing companies, particularly as the companies are trying to lobby the state legislature to exempt them from the Dynamex State Supreme Court decision, which effectively classifies their drivers as employees, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. And my question for you is, if you are a heavy user of ride-hailing companies like Uber and Lyft, how much of a price increase, percentage-wise, do you think you would be able to absorb to keep using Uber and Lyft in the way that you do? And how much would it depress your usage of ride-hailing companies? What sort of, for you, is the point of sensitivity where you would change how you actually use the apps? 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Carolyn, I don't know if we have any statistics on different types of ride-hailing customers, but I'm sure there are some who just sort of build in the cost of this because it's sort of de facto subsidized at a loss at this point, who would go out and buy a car, for example, if the fares go up appreciably.
Well, that is a very good question. I think that people who are that price sensitive would rather than buying a car would go to public transit and you know, sacrifice some time. But it is very true, as you said, that these rides are already being subsidized by venture capitalists. And now that the companies are public, public market investors are not going to have the same appetite for helping everybody in America get a $10 ride to the airport that actually should cost $30.
Carolyn, thanks so much. I know you're working on Deadline as always. We appreciate your being with us on Air Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Carolyn Saeed, San Francisco Chronicle reporter. We'll continue with our economist from Stanford University, Professor Paul Oyer, and Professor of Entrepreneurship and Technology at NYU, Arun Sundarajan. We'll talk with both professors as we continue. And again, our lines are open for you to ask them questions about the future of the ride-hailing companies Lyft and Uber, and particularly if you're someone who's heavily dependent on one or both companies to get around, how much of a price increase could you absorb if compensation for drivers goes up and fares follow? 866-893-KPCC. Back after a live update from Hedy Lynn Erdes. Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll talk about the Democratic National Committee's decision about how they're breaking up the field of 20 qualifying candidates for the first two nights of debates. It's group of 10, and the chemistry, how they match up with each other should be interesting. We'll talk about who's on which particular night of the debates a little bit later this hour. But right now, as the negotiations go on in Sacramento, the question is, if ride-hailing companies Lyft and Uber are not exempted from the state Supreme Court's Dynamex decision, which says that the drivers are employees, not independent contractors, are the ride-hailing companies economically viable? If they are going to be treating their drivers as employees, what would have to happen with fares to provide the benefits that would come with that? And at that point, would there be significant loss in ridership as fares increase? Jesus in El Segundo, I understand you drive for both of the companies. Your question, please.
Larry, hello. My question is, I don't understand why the company says, you know, that we're self-contractors. I would prefer to be an employee because I pay, honestly, like $15 a day just for insurance. And my insurance is very limited, yet we work 10, 12 hours a day, and insurance adds up really fast. I'm hoping that something gets done, something gets better. Because we honestly cannot be living like this. It's really expensive for us as drivers.
Yeah.
On top of that, we got our gas expenses and our maintenance of our vehicles. And I'm hoping that, you know, something gets done.
Yeah, Jesus, I appreciate it very much, and thank you for sharing your concerns. We have heard this consistently from drivers. Paul Oyer, you yourself were a driver, and after having done it yourself, do you wonder how drivers make it financially?
I mean, I think what Jesus is an important data point, as are many drivers. I mean, it's in order for this business model to work, the drivers cannot make a ton of money. And finding exactly that sweet spot where people like Jesus are willing to continue to do this, given their other options. And right now with unemployment at, 3.6% and the job market being really hot, Uber and Lyft face a real issue trying to get people to stick with this job. And doing that, you know, we'd love to see the drivers make more money. But as we talked about before the break, there's definitely a trade-off there between the fact that the fares are so reasonable.
What was your experience as a driver? What did you think of your relationship with the company as you were driving for it?
Well, now, you know, I was very lucky. I was doing this more as an experiment to understand the driver's incentives and what they face as part so that I could do a research study. I didn't have to make a living this way. And so it's a little bit unfair to sort of, you know, I was never in the position Jesus is in of, oh, you know, if I have a bad day, I've got a real problem. Having said that, you know, I think the job, in my experience, you earn about after expenses what you would have made working at a Chipotle or something like that. And I think the studies people have done agree with that. And so for a lot of people, working at Chipotle is a better job than driving for Uber. And for other people, driving for Uber is a much better job than working at Chipotle or a similar type of restaurant. And so, you know, it's a definitely a tough way to make a living, and you're not going to get rich doing it. But for some people, it's a much better option, or at least a somewhat better option than their alternative.
I don't know what Chipotle pays. I assume entry level's minimum wage or not much above that?
Yeah, a little bit more. I mean, you can look, and again, I've done research within Uber. You can look across cities, and the Uber drivers make about minimum wage or a little bit more in lower income cities. But in San Francisco, even after expenses, they're making, you know, $13, $15, $18 an hour, depending on who the person is and what their expenses are, what type of car they're driving and so forth. So it's a little more than minimum wage, but, you know, like I said, it's not a ton of money.
What's your sense if the added benefits that come from employee status legally have to be conferred to drivers, you know, what's your sense of how much that would improve the quality of life of drivers and how much that might affect the company?
Well, it's a really interesting question because what one thing that's kind of vague from the San Francisco Chronicle op-ed piece that the executives at Lyft and Uber wrote is exactly who would pay what into the benefits that are being proposed. So there was some talk of minimum of guaranteeing a base wage of some sort and other types of enabling them to get other benefits, healthcare, and various other types of flexible benefits. And it wasn't as clear how much Lyft and Uber are going to put into that beyond what they're putting in now. So it clearly makes sense for Uber and Lyft to take on the fixed costs of setting up benefits programs for their drivers. But then the question is, in a lot of, as you know from many other jobs, people pay their own healthcare costs often, even if the firm sets it up. So the answer to your question is the devil is in the details, and it's a little bit vague at this point exactly what will happen if Uber does go ahead and provide some of the benefits they talked about in that piece.
Professor Sundarajan of NYU, do you think ultimately this could lead to the revival of taxi companies?
I don't actually think so. I think, any form of on-demand transportation, is going to resemble Uber and Lyft in the future. If we do see a different sort of set of people facilitating these rides, the mobile phone or whatever device people are using in the future will certainly be the channel. But just to sort of go back to the points that you and Paul were making a few minutes ago, I think who pays for these benefits and how do we decouple the employer as the primary sort of funder of benefits, I think, is the central question here. I mean, I'm sure that there are many drivers like Jesus who want to be employees, but most of the drivers I've spoke to who want to be employees, if you drill down a little further, you'll find that they don't really want the employee-work arrangement. They want the nice things that are exclusively tied to full-time employment today, the insurance, the benefits, and the protections. And, you know, I've always been struck by the fact that Uber and Lyft have spent billions of dollars competing for drivers, like these massive driver incentives. Neither of them has had the freedom to compete for drivers by offering benefits. And, you know, you look at other workers in the United States, sure, the government mandates stuff, but, you know, as was pointed out, I mean, a lot of times it's labor market competition that is generating things like paid vacations, better health insurance, like, you know, better work insurance. So So I think what John Zimmer and Logan Green and Dara Khosrowshahi are proposing is sort of this holy grail of portable benefits for the sharing economy, and it's been that way for a while, some sort of safe harbor in which the platforms can prove that if they are given some sort of protection against employee class action lawsuits, sort of like, you know, worker classification lawsuits, that the market will respond and actually start to provide both funding models and actual funding for some of these benefits. I mean, it makes no sense to me to try and stuff tomorrow's workforce into this either full-time employee or independent contractor bucket. You know, the workforce of the future is largely going to be somewhere on this continuum rather than fitting neatly into one of these two categories. So we need to come up with funding structures that allow sort of greater fluidity for the individual, the institution, and the government to sort of play a role. And I'm hoping that, you know, this carve out for Uber and Lyft following Dynamics is going to be a first step towards that. Because it's not just Uber and Lyft drivers who are going to be in this position in a decade. It's going to be accountants, it's going to be consultants, it's going to be lawyers, maybe even professors who have these sort of fluid relationships with an institution rather than being full-time employees.
Professor Arun Sundarajan, NYU, thank you, sir, for being with us. He's professor of entrepreneurship and tech at NYU and author of the book The Sharing Economy. And our thanks to Stanford University professor of economics, Paul Oyer, who actually went to work as an Uber driver to better understand the driver relationship with the company. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, the Democratic National Committee has selected the two pools of 10 candidates each for the first two nights of the Democratic candidates' debates week after next. We'll hear how they're aligned in 1 minute.